Moraine did not seem to care one way or another about Zareen being a hunter of the horn. But once she learned the girl thought they would lead her to the Horn of Valir, once she learned he had known that too and not told her, Zareen had been more than forthcoming about both subjects with Moraine, to his mind. Then her cold, dark stare had taken on a quality that made him feel as if he had been packed into a barrel of snow in the dead of winter. The Aes Sedai said nothing, but she stared too often and too hard for any comfort. He looked over his shoulder and quickly returned to studying the shoreline. Zareen was sitting cross-legged on the deck near the horses tethered between the masts, her bundle and dark cloak beside her, her narrow, divided skirts neatly arrayed, pretending to study the rooftops and towers of the oncoming city. Moraine was studying Ilion, too, from just ahead of the men working the sweeps. But now and then she shot a hard look at the girl from under the deep hood of her fine gray wool cloak. How can she stand wearing that? His own coat was unbuttoned and his shirt unlaced at the neck. Zareen met each Aes Sedai look with a smile, but every time Moraine turned away, she swallowed and wiped her forehead. Heron rather admired her for managing that smile when Moraine was watching. It was a good deal more than he could do. He had never seen the Aes Sedai truly lose her temper, but he himself was at the point of wishing she would shout or rage or anything but stare at him. Light, maybe not anything. Maybe the stare was bearable. Lan sat further toward the bow than Moraine. His color-shifting cloak was still in the saddlebags at his feet, outwardly absorbed in examining his sword blade, but making little effort to hide his amusement. Sometimes his lips appeared to quirk very close to a smile. Perrin was not certain. At times he thought it was only a shadow. Shadows could make a hammer seem to smile. Each woman obviously thought she was the object of that amusement, but the warder did not appear to mind the tight-lipped frowns he received from both of them. A few days earlier, Perrin had heard Moraine ask Lan, in a voice like ice, whether he saw something to laugh at.
"I would never laugh at you, Moraine Sedai," he had replied calmly. "But if you truly intend to send me to Morella, I must become used to smiling. I hear that Morella tells her warders jokes. Gaidine must smile at their bondholders' quips. You have often given me quips to laugh at, have you not? Perhaps you would rather I stay with you after all." She had given him a look that would have nailed any other man to the mast, but the warder never blinked.
Land made cold steel seem like tin. The crew had taken to padding about their work in utter silence when Moraine and Zareen were on deck together. Captain Adara held his head tilted and looked as if he were listening for something he did not want to hear. He passed his orders in whispers instead of the shouts he had used at first. Everyone knew Moraine was Aes Sedai now, and everyone knew she was displeased. Perrin had let himself get into one shouting match with Zareen, and he was not sure which of them had said the words Aes Sedai, but the whole crew knew. Bloody woman. He was uncertain whether he meant Moraine or Zareen. If she is the falcon, what is the hawk supposed to be? Am I going to be stuck with two women like her? Light, no. She is not a falcon, and this is an end to it. The only good thing he could find in all this was that with an angry Aes Sedai to worry about, none of the crew looked twice at his eyes. Loyal was nowhere in sight at the moment. The Ogier stayed in his stifling cabin whenever Moraine and Zareen were topside together, working on his notes, he said. He only came on deck at night to smoke his pipe. Perrin did not see how he could take the heat. Even Moraine and Zareen were better than being below decks. He sighed and kept his eyes on Ilion. The city the ship was approaching was large, as big as Kyrian or Camelin, the only two great cities he had ever seen, and it reared out of a huge marsh that stretched for miles like a plain of waving grass. Ilion had no walls at all, but it seemed to be all towers and palaces. The buildings were all pale stone, except for some that appeared covered with white plaster. But the stone was white and gray and reddish, and even faint shades of green. Rooftops of tile sparkled under the sun with 100 different hues. The long docks held many ships, most dwarfing the Snow Goose, and bustled with the loading and unloading of cargo. There were shipyards at the far end of the city, where great ships stood in every stage from skeletons of thick wooden ribs to nearly ready to slide into the harbor. Perhaps Ilion was large enough to keep wolves at bay. They surely would not hunt in those marshes. The snow goose had outrun the wolves that had followed him from the mountains. He reached out for them gingerly now, and felt nothing. A curiously empty feeling, given that it was what he wanted. His dreams had been his own, for the most part, since that first night. Moraine had asked about them in a cold voice, and he had told the truth. Twice he had found himself in that odd sort of wolf dream, and both times Hopper had appeared, chasing him away, telling him he was too young yet, too new. What Moraine made of that, he had no idea. She told him nothing, except to say he had best be wary. "That's as well by me," he growled. He was almost becoming used to Hopper being dead but not dead, in the wolf dreams at least. Behind him he heard Captain Adara scuff his boots on the deck and mutter something, startled that anyone would speak aloud. Lines were hurled ashore from the ship. While they were still being made fast to stone posts along the docks, the slightly built captain leaped into motion, whispering fiercely to his crew. He had booms rigged to lift the horses onto the wharf almost as quickly as the gangplank was in place. Land's black warhorse kicked and nearly broke the boom hoisting him. Loyal's huge, hairy fetlocked mount needed two.
"An honor,"
Adara whispered to Moraine with a bow as she stepped onto the wide plank leading to the dock.
"An honor to have served you, Aes Sedai."
She strode ashore without looking at him, her face hidden in her deep hood. Loyal did not appear until everyone else was on the dock, and the horses, too. The Ogier came thumping up the gangplank, trying to don his long coat, while carrying his big saddlebags and striped blanket roll and his cloak over one arm.
"I did not know we had arrived," he rumbled breathlessly. "I was rereading my..."
He trailed off with a glance at Moraine. She appeared to be absorbed in watching Lan saddle Aldi, but the Ogier's ears flickered like a nervous cat's. "His notes," Perrin thought. "One of these days I have to see what he is saying about all this." Something tickled the back of his neck, and he jumped a foot before he realized he was smelling a clean, herbal scent through the spices and tar and stinks of the docks. Zarain wiggled her fingers, smiling at them.
"If I can do that with just a brush of my fingers, farm boy, I wonder how high you would jump if I..."
He was growing a little tired of considering looks from those dark, tilted eyes.
"She may be pretty, but she looks at me the way I'd look at a tool I'd never seen before, trying to puzzle out how it was made and what it was supposed to be used for." "Zarain,"
Moraine's voice was cool but unruffled.
"I am called Fael," Zarain said firmly, and for a moment, with her bold nose, she did look like a falcon.
"Zarain," Moraine said firmly, "it is time for our ways to part. You will find better hunting elsewhere and safer."
"I think not," Zarain said just as firmly. "A hunter must follow the trail she sees, and no hunter would ignore the trail you four leave. And I am Fael."
She spoiled it a bit by swallowing, but she did not blink as she met Moraine's eyes.
"Are you certain?" Moraine said softly. "Are you sure you will not change your mind, Falcon?"
"I will not."
"There is nothing you or your stone-faced warder can do to stop me."
Zarain hesitated, then added slowly, as if she had decided to be entirely truthful,
"At least there is nothing that you will do that can stop me. I know a little of Aes Sedai. I know, for all the stories, that there are things you will not do. And I do not believe Stoneface would do what he must to make me give over."
"Are you sure enough of that to risk it?" Lan spoke quietly, and his face did not change, but Zarain swallowed again.
"There is no need to threaten her, Lan," Perrin said.
He was surprised to realize he was glaring at the warder. Moraine's glance silenced him and the warder both.
"You believe you know what an Aes Sedai will not do, do you?"
she said more softly than before. Her smile was not pleasant.
"If you wish to go with us, this is what you must do."
Lan's eyelids flickered in surprise. The two women stared at each other like falcon and mouse, but Zarain was not the falcon now.
"You will swear by your hunter's oath to do as I say, to heed me, and not to leave us. Once you know more than you should of what we do, I will not allow you to fall into the wrong hands. Know that for truth, girl. You will swear to act as one of us, and do nothing that will endanger our purpose. You will ask no questions of where we go or why. You will be satisfied with what I choose to tell you. All of this you will swear, or you will remain here in Ilion, and you will not leave this marsh until I return to release you, if it takes the rest of your life. That I swear.
Zareen turned her head uneasily, watching Moraine out of one eye.
I may accompany you if I swear?
The Aes Sedai nodded.
I will be one of you, the same as Loyal or Stoneface. But I can ask no questions. Are they allowed to ask questions?
Moraine's face lost a little of its patience. Zareen stood up straighter and held her head high.
Very well, then, I swear. By the oath I took as a hunter. If I break one, I will have broken both. I swear it.
Done, Moraine said, touching the younger woman's forehead. Zareen shivered.
Since you brought her to us, Perrin, she is your responsibility.
Mine? He yelped.
I am no one's responsibility but my own,
Zareen nearly shouted. The Aes Sedai went serenely on as if they had never opened their mouths.
It seems you have found Min's falcon, Taviren. I have tried to discourage her, but it appears she will perch on your shoulder whatever I do. The pattern weaves a future for you, it seems. Yet remember this. If I must, I will snip your thread from the pattern, and if the girl endangers what must be, you will share her fate.
I did not ask for her to come along,
Perrin protested. Moraine calmly mounted Aldeeb, adjusting her cloak over the white mare's saddle.
I did not ask for her.
Loyal shrugged at him and silently mouthed something, no doubt a saying about the dangers of angering Aes Sedai.
You are Taviren,
Zareen said disbelievingly. Her gaze ran over his sturdy country clothes and settled on his yellow eyes.
Well, perhaps. Whatever you are, she threatens you as easily as she does me. Who is Min? What does she mean I will perch on your shoulder?
Her face tightened.
If you try making me your responsibility, I will carve your ears. Do you hear me?
Grimacing, he slipped his unstrung bow under the saddle girths along Stepper's flank and climbed into the saddle. Restive after days on the ship, the Dun lived up to his name until Perrin calmed him with a firm hand on the reins and pats to his neck.
None of that deserves an answer, he growled.
Min bloody told her. Burn you, Min. Burn you too, Moraine. And Zareen.
He could never remember Rand or Matt being bullied by women on every side. Or himself before leaving Emmons Field. Nynaeve had been the only one. And Mistress Luhan, of course. She ran him and Master Luhan both, everywhere but in the smithy. And Egwene had a way about her, though mostly with Rand. Mistress Alvir, Egwene's mother, always had a smile, but things seemed to end up being done as she wanted too. And the women's circle had looked over everybody's shoulder. Grumbling to himself, he reached down and took Zareen by an arm. She gave a squawk and nearly dropped her bundle as he hoisted her up behind his saddle. Those divided skirts of hers made it easy for her to straddle Stepper.
Moraine will have to buy you a horse, he muttered. You cannot walk the whole way.
You are strong, blacksmith, Zareen said, rubbing her arm. But I am not a piece of iron.
She shifted around, stuffing her bundle and her cloak between them.
I can buy my own horse if I need one. The whole way where?
Lan was already riding off the dock into the city with Moraine and Loyal behind him. The Ogier looked back at Perrin.
No questions, remember? And my name is Perrin, Zareen, not Big Man or Blacksmith or anything else. Perrin. Perrin Ibarra.
And mine is Fael, Shaggy Hair.
With something close to a snarl, he booted Stepper after the others. Zareen had to throw her arms around his waist to keep from being tossed over the Dun's crupper. He thought she was laughing. Chapter 42 Easing the Badger. The hubbub of the city quickly submerged Zareen's laughter, if that was what it was, beneath all the clamor that Perrin remembered from Camelin and Kyrian. The sounds were different here, slower and pitched differently, but they were the same, too. Boots and wheels and hooves on rough, uneven paving stones, cart and wagon axles squealing, music and song and laughter drifting from inns and taverns. Voices. A hum of voices like putting his head into a giant beehive. A great city living. From down a side street he heard the clang of hammer on anvil and shifted his shoulders unconsciously. He missed the hammer and tongs in his hands, the white-hot metal giving off sparks as his blows shaped it. The smithy sounds faded behind, buried under the rumble of carts and wagons and the babble of shopkeepers and people in the streets. Under all the smells of people and horses, cooking and baking, in a hundred scents he had found peculiar to cities, lay the smell of marsh and salt water. He was surprised the first time they came to a bridge inside the city, a low arch of stone over a waterway no more than 30 paces across. But by the third such bridge he realized that Ilion was crisscrossed by as many canals as streets, with men poling laden barges as often as plying whips to move heavy wagons. Sedan chairs wove through the crowds in the streets, and occasionally the lacquered coach of some wealthy merchant or a noble, with crest or house sign painted large on the doors. Many of the men wore peculiar beards that left their upper lip bare, while the women seemed to favor hats with wide brims and attached scarves that they wound around their necks. Once they crossed a great square, many hides in extant, surrounded by huge columns of white marble, at least 15 spans tall, and 2 spans thick, supporting nothing but a wreath of carved olive branches at the top of each. A huge white palace stood at either end of the square, each all columned walks and airy balconies, slender towers and purple roofs. Each reflected the other exactly, at first glance, but then Perrin realized that one was just a fraction smaller in each dimension, its towers perhaps less than a pace shorter. "The king's palace," Zareen said against his back, "and the great hall of the council. It is said the first king of Ilion said the Council of Nine could have any palace they wished, just as long as they did not try to build one larger than his. So the council copied the king's palace exactly, but 2 feet smaller in every measurement. That has been the way of Ilion ever since. The king and the Council of Nine duel with each other, and the assemblage struggles with both. And so while they carry on their battles, the people live much as they wish, with none to look over their shoulders too much. It is not a bad way to live, if you must be tied to one city. You would also like to know, I think, Blacksmith, that this is the square of Tammuz, where I took the hunter's oath. I think I will end up teaching you so much no one will notice the hay in your hair." Perrin held his tongue with an effort, resolving not to stare so openly again. No one seemed to take Loyal as anything much out of the ordinary. A few people looked at him twice, and some small children scampered along in their wake for a time, but it appeared that Ogier were not uncommon in Ilion. None of the folk seemed to notice the heat or the damp, either. For once, Loyal did not appear pleased with the people's acceptance. His long eyebrows drooped down on his cheeks, and his ears had wilted, though Perrin was not sure that was not just the air. His own shirt clung to him with a mixture of sweat and the damp air. "Are you afraid you'll find other Ogier here, Loyal?" he asked. He felt Zareen stir against his back and cursed his tongue. He meant to let the woman know even less than Moraine apparently meant to tell her. That way, perhaps, she would grow bored enough to leave. If Moraine will let her go now. "Burn me, I don't want any bloody falcon perched on my shoulder, even if she is pretty." Loyal nodded.
"Our stonemasons sometimes come here."
He spoke in a whisper, not only for an Ogier, but for anyone. Even Perrin could barely hear.
"From Steading Shangtai, I mean. It was masons from our steading who built part of Ilion, the palace of the assemblage, the great hall of the council, some of the others. And they always send to us when repairs need to be done. Perrin, if there are Ogier here, they will make me go back to the steading. I should have thought of it before now. This place makes me uneasy, Perrin.
His ears shifted nervously. Perrin moved a step or closer and reached up to pat Loyal's shoulder. It was a long reach, above his head. Conscious of Zareen at his back, he chose his words carefully.
Loyal, I do not believe Moraine would let them take you. You have been with us a long time, and she seems to want you with us. She will not let them take you, Loyal.
Why not? He wondered suddenly. She keeps me because she thinks I may be important to Rand, and maybe because she doesn't want me telling what I know to anyone. Maybe that's why she wants him to stay.
Of course she would not,
Loyal said in a slightly stronger voice, and his ears perked up.
I am very useful, after all. She may need to travel the ways again, and she could not without me.
Zareen shifted against Perrin's back, and he shook his head, trying to catch Loyal's eye. But Loyal was not looking. He seemed to have just heard what he had said, and the tufts on his ears had fallen a little.
I do hope it's not that, Perrin.
The Ogier looked at the city around them, and his ears went all the way back down.
I do not like this place, Perrin.
Moraine rode closer to Lan and spoke softly, but Perrin managed to catch her words.
Something is wrong in this city.
The warder nodded. Perrin felt an itch between his shoulders. The Aes Sedai had sounded grim.
First Loyal and now her? What don't I see?
The sun shone down on the sparkling roof tiles, made reflections from pale stone walls. Those buildings looked as if they might be cool inside. The buildings were clean and bright, and so were the people.
The people.
At first he saw nothing out of the ordinary. Men and women moving about their business, purposeful, but slower than he was used to further north. He thought it might be the heat and the bright sun. Then he spotted a baker's lad trotting down the street with a big tray of fresh loaves balanced on his head. The young fellow wore a grimace on his face that was nearly a snarl. A woman in front of a weaver's shop looked as if she might bite the man holding up the bright-colored bolts for her inspection. A juggler on a corner ground his teeth and stared at the folk who tossed coins into the cap lying in front of him as if he hated them. Not everyone looked so, but it seemed to him that at least one face in five wore anger and hatred. And he did not think they were even aware of it.
What is the matter? Zareen asked. You are tensing. It is like holding onto a rock.
Something is wrong, he told her. I do not know what, but something is wrong.
Loyal nodded sadly and murmured about how they would make him go back. The buildings around them began to change as they rode, crossing more bridges as they crossed Ilion to its other side. The pale stone was as often undressed as polished now. The towers and palaces vanished to be replaced by inns and warehouses. Many of the men in the streets, and some of the women, had an oddly rolling gait. They all had the bare feet he associated with sailors. The smells of pitch and hemp were strong in the air, and the scent of wood, both freshly cut and cured, with sour mud overlying both. The canal's odors changed, too, making his nose wrinkle.
Chamber pots, he thought. Chamber pots and old privies.
It made him feel queasy. The Bridge of Flowers, Lan announced as they crossed yet another low bridge. He inhaled deeply. And now we are in the perfumed quarter. The Ilioners are a poetic people. Zareen stifled a laugh against Perrin's back. As if he were suddenly impatient with the slow pace of Ilion, the warder led them quickly through the streets to an inn, two stories of rough green-veined stone topped with pale green tiles. Evening was coming on, the light growing softer as the sun settled. It gave a little relief from the heat, but not much. Boys seated on mounting blocks in front of the inn hopped up to take their horses. One black-haired lad about 10 asked Loyal if he were an Ogier, and when Loyal said he was, the boy said,
I did think it did be,
with a self-satisfied nod. He led Loyal's big horse away, tossing the copper Loyal had given him into the air and catching it. Perrin frowned up at the inn sign for a moment before following the others in. A white-striped badger danced on its hind legs, with a man carrying what seemed to be a silver shovel. Easing the badger, it read.
It must be some story I never heard.
The common room had sawdust on the floor and tobacco smoke filled the air. It also smelled of wine and fish cooking in the kitchen, and a heavy, flowered perfume. The exposed beams of the high ceiling were rough-hewn and aged dark. This early in the evening, no more than a quarter of the stools and benches were filled by men in workmen's plain coats and vests, some with the bare feet of sailors. All of them sat clustered as close as they could manage around one table, where a pretty, dark-eyed girl, the wearer of the perfume, sang to the strumming of a 12-string bittern and danced on the tabletop with swirls of her skirt. Her loose white blouse had an extremely low neck. Perrin recognized the tune, the dancing lass, but the words the girl sang were different from what he knew.
A Lugard girl, she came to town to see what she could see. With a wink of her eye and a smile on her lip, she snagged a boy or three. With an ankle slim and skin so pale, she caught the owner of a ship. With a soft little sigh and a gay little laugh, she made her way so free, so free.
She launched into another verse, and when Perrin realized what she was singing, his face grew hot. He had thought nothing could shock him after seeing Tinker Girls dance, but that had only hinted at things. This girl was singing them right out. Zareen was nodding in time to the music and grinning. Her grin widened when she looked at him.
"Why, farm boy, I do not think I ever knew a man your age who could still blush."
He glared at her and barely stopped himself from saying something he knew would be stupid. "This bloody woman has me jumping before I can think. Light, I'll wager she thinks I never even kissed a girl." He tried not to listen to any more of what the girl was singing. If he could not get the red out of his face, Zareen was sure to make more of it. A flash of startlement had passed across the face of the proprietress when they entered. A large, round woman with her hair in a thick roll at the back of her neck and a smell of strong soap about her. She suppressed her surprise quickly, though, and hurried to Moraine.
"Mistress Mari," she said, "I did never think to see you here today."
She hesitated, eyeing Perrin and Zareen, glanced once at Loyal, but not in the searching way she looked at them. Her eyes actually brightened at the sight of the Ogier, but her real attention was all on Mistress Mari. She lowered her voice.
"Have my pigeons not arrived safely?"
Lan, she seemed to accept as a part of Moraine.
"I am sure they have, Nida," Moraine said. "I have been away, but I am sure Adina has noted down everything you reported."
She eyed the girl singing on the table with no outward disapproval, nor any other expression.
"The badger was considerably quieter when last I was here." "Aye, Mistress Mari, it did be that. But the louts have no gotten over the winter yet, it does seem. I have no had a fight in the badger in 10 years, till the tale of this winter gone."
She nodded toward the one man not sitting near the singer, a fellow even bigger than Perrin, standing against the wall with his thick arms folded, tapping his foot to the music.
"Even Billy did have a hard time keeping them down. So I did hire the girl to take their minds from anger. From some place in Altara she does come."
She tilted her head, listening for a moment.
"A fair voice. But I did sing it better, aye, and dance better, too, when I did be her age."
Perrin gaped at the thought of this huge woman capering on a table, singing that song. A bit of it came through, "I'll wear no shift at all," until Zareen fisted him hard in the short ribs. He grunted. Nida looked his way.
"I'll mix you some honey and sulfur, lad, for that throat. You'll no want to take a chill before the winter warms, nor with a pretty girl like that one on your arm."
Moraine gave him a look that said he was interfering with her.
"Strange that you should suffer fights," she said. "I well remember how your nephew stops such. Has something occurred to make people more irritable?"
Nida mused for a moment.
"Perhaps. It do be hard to say. The young lordlings do always come down to the docks for the wenching and carousing they can no get away with where the air does smell fresher. Perhaps they do come here more often now, since the hard of the winter. Perhaps. And others do snap at each other more, too. It did be a hard winter. That does make men angrier, and women as well. All that rain and cold. Why, I did wake 2 mornings to find ice in my washbasin. Not so hard as the last winter, of course, but that did be a winter for 1,000 years. Almost enough to make me believe those travelers' tales of frozen water fallen from the sky. She giggled to show how little she believed that. It was an odd sound from such a large woman. Perrin shook his head. She doesn't believe in snow? But if she thought this weather was cool, he could believe it of her. Moraine bent her head in thought, her hood shadowing her face. The girl on the table was beginning a new verse, and Perrin found himself listening in spite of himself. He had never heard of any woman doing anything remotely like what the girl was singing about, but it did sound interesting. He noticed Zareen watching him listen and tried to pretend he had not been. "What has occurred out of the ordinary in Ilion of late?" Moraine said finally. "I do suppose you could call Lord Bren's ascension to the Council of Nine unusual," Nita said. "Fortune prick me. I can no remember ever hearing his name before the winter. But he did come to the city, from somewhere near the Mirandian border, it be rumored, and did be raised inside a week. It do be said he be a good man, and strongest of the Nine. They all do follow his lead, it be said, though he be newest and unknown. But sometimes I do have strange dreams of him." Moraine had opened her mouth to tell Nita she had meant in the last few nights, Perrin was sure, but she hesitated and instead said, "What sort of strange dreams, Nita?"
"Oh, foolishness, Mistress Mari, just foolishness. You do truly wish to hear it? Dreams of Lord Bren in strange places and walking bridges hanging in air. All fogged these dreams do be, but near every night they do come. Did you ever hear of such? Foolishness, fortune prick me. Yet it do be odd. Billy does say he does dream the same dreams. I do think he does hear my dreams and copy them. Billy do be none too bright sometimes, I do think."
"You may do him an injustice," Moraine breathed.
Perrin stared at her dark hood. She had sounded shaken, even more shaken than when she thought a new false dragon had risen in Geladon. He could not smell fear, but Moraine was frightened. It was a far more terrifying thought than Moraine angry. He could imagine her angry. He could not begin to conceive of her afraid.
"How I do maunder on," Nita said, patting the rolled hair at the back of her neck. "As if my foolish dreams do be important."
She giggled again, a quick giggle. This was not as foolish as believing in snow.
"You do sound tired, Mistress Mari. I will show you to your rooms, and then a good meal of fresh-caught red stripe."
Red stripe? A fish, he thought it must be. He could smell fish cooking.
"Rooms," Moraine said. "Yes, we will take rooms. The meal can wait."
"Ships. Nita, what ships sail for Tyr? Early on the morrow.
I have that which I must do tonight."
Lan glanced at her, frowning.
"For Tyr, Mistress Mari," Nita laughed. "Why, none for Tyr. The Nine did forbid any ship to sail for Tyr a month gone now, nor any from Tyr to call here, though I do think the sea folk pay it no mind. But there do be no sea folk ship in the harbor. It do be odd that. The order of the Nine, I do mean, and the king silent on it, when he does always raise his voice if they but take a step without his lead. Or perhaps it be no that, exactly. All talk do be of war with Tyr, but the boatmen and wagoneers who do carry supplies to the army do say the soldiers do all look north to Murundi."
"The paths of the shadow are tangled," Moraine said in a tight voice. "We will do what we must. The rooms, Nita, and then we will eat that meal."
Perrin's room was more comfortable than he expected, given the look of the rest of the badger. The bed was wide, the mattress soft. The door was made of tilted slats, and when he opened the windows, a breeze crossed the room, carrying the smells of the harbor. And something of the canals, too, but at least it was cooling. He hung his cloak on a peg along with his quiver and axe, and propped his bow in the corner. Everything else he left in the saddlebags and blanket roll. The night might not be restful.
If Moraine had sounded afraid before, it had been nothing to when she said that something must be done tonight. For an instant, then, fear scent had steamed from her, as from a woman announcing that she was going to stick her hand in a hornet's nest and crush them with her bare fingers.
What in the light is she up to? If Moraine is frightened, I should be terrified.
He was not, he realized. Not terrified or even frightened. He felt excited. Ready for something to happen. Almost eager. Determined. He recognized the feelings. They were what wolves felt just before they fought.
Burn me, I'd rather be afraid.
He was first back down to the common room except for Loyal. Nita had arranged a large table for them, with ladder-backed chairs instead of benches. She had even found a chair big enough for Loyal. The girl across the room was singing a song about a rich merchant who, having just lost his team of horses in an improbable way, had for some reason decided to pull his carriage himself. The men listening around her roared with laughter. The windows showed darkness coming on more quickly than he had expected. The air smelled as if it might be making up to rain.
"This inn has an ogier room," Loyal said as Perrin sat down. "Apparently, every inn in Ilion has one in hopes of gaining ogier custom when the stonemasons come. Nita claims it is lucky having an ogier under the roof. I cannot think they get many. The masons always stay together when they go outside to work. Humans are so hasty, and the elders are always afraid tempers will flare and someone will put a long handle on his axe."
He eyed the men around the singer as if he suspected them of it. His ears were drooping again. The rich merchant was in the process of losing his carriage to more laughter. "Did you find out whether any ogier from Steading Shangtai are in Ilion?"
"There were, but Nita said they left during the winter. She said they had not finished their work." "I do not understand it. The masons would not have left work undone unless they were not paid, and Nita said it was not that. One morning, they were just gone, though someone saw them walking down the Moreto Causeway in the night. Perrin, I do not like this city. I do not know why, but it makes me uneasy."
"Ogier," Moraine said, "are sensitive to some things."
She still had her face hidden, but Nita had apparently sent someone to buy her a light cloak of dark blue linen. The fear smell was gone from her, but her voice sounded under tight control. Lan held her chair for her. His eyes looked worried. Zareen was the last down, running her fingers through just washed hair. The herbal scent was stronger around her than before. She stared at the platter Nita placed on the table and muttered under her breath,
"I hate fish."
The stout woman had brought all the food on a small cart with shelves. It was dusty in places, as if it had been hastily brought out from the storeroom in Moraine's honor. The dishes were seafolk porcelain, too, if chipped.
"Eat," Moraine said, looking straight at Zareen. "Remember that any meal can be your last. You chose to travel with us, so tonight you will eat fish. Tomorrow you may die."
Perrin did not recognize the nearly round white fish with red stripes, but they smelled good. He lifted two onto his plate with the serving fork and grinned at Zareen around a mouthful. They tasted good, too, lightly spiced.
"Eat your nasty fish, Falcon," he thought.
He also thought that Zareen looked as if she might bite him.
"Do you wish me to stop the girl singing, Mistress Mari?"
Nita asked. She was setting bowls of peas and some sort of stiff yellow mush on the table.
"So you can eat in quiet."
Staring at her plate, Moraine did not seem to hear. Land listened a moment. The merchant had already lost, in succession, his carriage, his cloak, his boots, his gold, and the rest of his clothes, and was now reduced to wrestling a pig for its dinner, and shook his head. "She will not bother us." He looked close to smiling for a moment before he glanced at Moraine. Then the worry returned to his eyes.
"What is wrong?" Zareen said.
She was ignoring the fish.
"I know something is.
I have not seen that much expression on you, Stoneface, since I met you."
"No questions," Moraine said sharply. "You will know what I tell you and no more." "What will you tell me?"
Zareen demanded. The Aes Sedai smiled.
Eat your fish. The meal went on in near silence after that, except for the songs drifting across the room.
There was one about a rich man whose wife and daughters made a fool of him time and again without ever deflating his self-importance. Another that concerned a young woman who decided to take a walk without any clothes, and one that told of a blacksmith who managed to shoe himself instead of the horse. Zareen nearly choked, laughing at that one. Forgot herself enough to take a bite of fish and suddenly grimaced as if she had put mud in her mouth.
I won't laugh at her, Perrin told himself. However foolish she looks, I'll show her what manners are.
They taste good, don't they? He said. Zareen gave him a bitter look and Moraine a frown for interrupting her thoughts. And that was all the talk there was. Nita was clearing away the dishes and setting an array of cheeses on the table when a stink of something vile lifted the hackles on the back of Perrin's neck. It was a smell of something that should not be, and he had smelled it twice before. He peered about the common room uneasily. The girl still sang to the knot of listeners, some men were strolling across the floor from the door, and Billy still leaned on the wall, tapping his foot to the sounds of the bittern. Nita patted her rolled hair, gave the room a quick glance, and turned to push the cart away. He looked at his companions. Loyal, unsurprisingly, had pulled a book from his coat pocket and seemed to have forgotten where he was. Zareen, absently rolling a piece of white cheese into a ball, was eyeing first Perrin, then Moraine, then him again, while trying to pretend she was not. It was Lana Moraine he was really interested in, though. They could sense a Murdrol or a Trolloc or any shadow spawn before it came closer than a few hundred paces, but the Aes Sedai was staring distantly at the table in front of her, and the warder was cutting a chunk of yellow cheese and watching her. Yet the smell of wrongness was there, as at Jara and the edge of Remen. And this time it was not going away. It seemed to be coming from something within the common room. He studied the room again. Billy leaned against the wall, some men crossing the floor, the girl singing on the table, all the laughing men sitting around her. Men crossing the floor? He frowned at them. Six men with ordinary faces walking toward where he was sitting. Very ordinary faces. He was just starting to re-inspect the men, listening to the girl, when suddenly it came to him that the stink of wrongness was rolling from the six. Abruptly, they had daggers in their hands, as if they had realized he had seen them. "They have knives!" he roared, and threw the cheese platter at them. The common room erupted into confusion, men shouting, the singer screaming, Nita shouting for Billy, everything happening at once. Lan leaped to his feet, and a ball of fire darted from Moraine's hand, and Loyal snatched up his chair like a club, and Zareen danced to one side, cursing. She had a knife in her hand, too, but Perrin was too busy to notice much of what anyone else did. Those men seemed to be looking straight at him, and his axe was hanging from a peg up in his room. Seizing a chair, he ripped off a thick chair leg that ran up to make one side of the ladder back, hurled the rest of the chair at the men, and set about him with his long bludgeon. They were trying to reach him with their naked steel, as if Lan and the others were only obstacles in their way. It was a tight tangle where all he could manage was to knock blades away from him, and his wilder swings threatened Lan and Loyal and Zareen as much as any of his six attackers. From the corner of his eye, he saw Moraine standing to one side, frustration on her face. They were all so mixed together that she could do nothing without endangering friend as well as foe. None of the knife wielders as much as glanced at her. She was not between them and Perrin. Panting, he managed to crack one of the ordinary-looking men across the head so hard that he heard bones splinter, and abruptly realized they were all down. It all seemed to him to have gone on for a quarter of an hour or more, but he saw that Billy was just halting, his large hands working as he stared at the six men sprawled dead on the floor. Billy had not even had time to reach the fight before it was done. Lan wore a face even grimmer than usual. He began searching the bodies thoroughly, but with a quickness that spoke of distaste. Loyal still had his chair raised to swing. He gave a start and set it down with an embarrassed grin. Moraine was staring at Perrin, and so was Zareen as she retrieved her knife from the chest of one of the dead men. That stench of wrongness was gone, as if it had died with them.
Gray men,
the Aes Sedai said softly.
And after you.
Greymen, Nita laughed, both loud and nervously. Why, Mistress Mari, next you'll say you do believe in boggles and bugbears and fetches, and old Grim riding with the black dogs in the wild hunt.
Some of the men who had been listening to the songs laughed, too, though they looked as uneasily at Moraine as at the dead men. The singer stared at Moraine as well, her eyes wide. Perrin remembered that one ball of fire before everything grew too jumbled. One of the Greymen had a somewhat charred look about him and gave off a sickly, sweet, burned smell. Moraine turned from Perrin to the stout woman.
A man may walk in the shadow, the Aes Sedai said calmly, without being shadow spawn.
Oh, aye, dark friends.
Nita put her hands on generous hips and frowned at the corpses. Lan had finished his searching. He glanced at Moraine and shook his head as if he had not really expected to find anything.
More likely thieves, though I did never hear of thieves bold enough to come right into an inn. I did never have even one killing in the Badger before. Billy, clear these out into a canal and put down fresh sawdust. The back way, mind. I do not want the watch putting their long noses into the Badger.
Billy nodded as if eager to be useful after failing to take a hand earlier. He grabbed a dead man by the belt in either hand and carried them back toward the kitchen.
Aes Sedai, the dark-eyed singer said. I did not mean to offend with my common songs.
She was covering the exposed part of her bosom, which was most of it, with her hands.
I can sing others, if you so like.
Sing whatever you wish, girl, Moraine told her. The White Tower is not so isolated from the world as you seem to think, and I have heard rougher songs than you would sing.
Even so, she did not look pleased that the common now knew she was Aes Sedai. She glanced at Lan, gathered the linen cloak around her, and started for the door. The warder moved quickly to intercept her, and they spoke quietly in front of the door. But Perrin could hear as well as if they had whispered right next to him.
Did you mean to go without me? Lan said. I pledged to keep you whole, Moraine, when I took your bond.
You have always known there were some dangers you are not equipped to handle, my Gaidine. I must go alone.
Moraine, she cut him off.
Heed me, Lan. Should I fail, you will know it, and you will be compelled to return to the White Tower. I would not change that, even if I had time. I do not mean you to die in a vain attempt to avenge me. Take Perrin with you. It seems the shadow has made his importance in the pattern known to me, if not clear. I was a fool. Rand is so strongly Tavirn that I ignored what it must mean that he had two others close by him.
With Perrin and Matt, the Amarlin may still be able to affect the course of events. With Rand loose, she will have to.
Tell her what has happened, my Gaidine.
You speak as if you are already dead, Lan said roughly.
The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, and the shadow darkens the world. Heed me, Lan, and obey as you swore to.
With that, she was gone. Chapter 43 Shadow Brothers. The dark-eyed girl climbed back on her table and started singing again in an unsteady voice. The tune was one Perrin knew as Mistress Ainora's Rooster, and though the words were different once more, to his disappointment, and embarrassment that he was disappointed, it actually was about a rooster. Mistress Luhan herself would not have disapproved.
Light, I'm getting as bad as Matt.
None of the listeners complained. Some of the men did look a bit disgruntled, but they seemed to be as anxious about what Moraine might approve as the singer was. No one wished to offend an Aes Sedai, even with her gone. Billy came back and hoisted two more Greymen. A few of the men listening to the song glanced at the corpses and shook their heads. One of them spat on the sawdust. Lan came to stand in front of Perrin.
How did you know them, blacksmith? He asked quietly. Their taint of evil is not strong enough for Moraine or me to sense. Greymen have walked past 100 guards without being noticed, and warders among them.
Very conscious of Zareen's eyes on him, Perrin tried to make his voice even softer than Lan's.
I smelled them. I've smelled them before at Jara and at Remen, but it always vanished. They were gone before we got there both times. He was not sure whether Zareen had overheard or not. She was leaning forward, trying to listen and trying to appear not to at the same time.
Following Rand, then. Following you now, blacksmith.
The warder gave no visible sign of surprise. He raised his voice to a more normal level.
I'm going to look around outside, blacksmith. Your eyes might see something I miss.
Perrin nodded. It was a measure of the warder's worry that he asked for help.
Ogier, your folks see better than most, too.
Oh,
Loyal said.
Well, I suppose I could take a look, too.
His big round eyes rolled sideways toward the two gray men still on the floor.
I would not think any more of them were out there, would you?
What are we looking for, Stoneface? Zareen said.
Lan eyed her for a moment, then shook his head as if he had decided not to say something.
Whatever we find, girl, I will know it when I see it.
Perrin thought about going upstairs for his axe, but the warder made for the door, and he was not wearing his sword.
He hardly needs it, Perrin thought grumpily. He is almost as dangerous without it as with.
He held onto the chair leg as he followed. It was a relief to see that Zareen still had her knife in her hand. Thick black clouds were roiling overhead. The street was as dark as late twilight, and empty of people who had apparently not waited to be caught in the rain. One fellow was running across a bridge down the street. He was the only person Perrin saw in any direction. The wind was picking up, blowing a rag along the uneven paving stones. Another, caught under the edge of one of the mounting blocks, flapped with a small snapping sound. Thunder grumbled and rolled. Perrin wrinkled his nose. There was a smell of fireworks on that wind.
No, not fireworks, exactly.
It was a burned sulfur sort of smell. Almost. Zareen tapped the chair leg in his hands with a knife blade.
You really are strong, big man. You tore that chair apart as if it were made of twigs.
Perrin grunted. He realized he was standing straighter and deliberately made himself slouch.
Fool girl.
Zareen laughed softly, and suddenly he did not know whether to straighten or stay as he was.
Fool.
This time he meant it for himself.
You're supposed to be looking. For what?
He did not see anything but the street, did not smell anything but the almost burned sulfur scent, and Zareen, of course. Loyal appeared to be wondering what it was he was looking for, too. He scratched a tufted ear, peered one way down the street, then the other, then scratched the other ear. Then he stared up at the roof of the inn. Lan appeared from the alleyway beside the inn and moved out into the street, eyes studying the darker shadows along the buildings.
Maybe he missed seeing something, Perrin muttered,
though he found it hard to believe, and turned toward the alley.
I am supposed to be looking, so I'll look. Maybe he did miss something.
Lan had stopped a little way down the street, staring at the paving stones in front of his feet. The warder started back toward the inn, walking quickly, but peering at the street ahead of him as if following something. Whatever it was led straight to one of the mounting blocks, almost beside the inn door. He stopped there, staring at the top of the gray stone block. Perrin decided to abandon going down the alley. It stank as much as the canals in this part of Ilion, for one thing, and walked over to Lan instead. He saw what the warder was staring at right away. Pressed into the top of the stone mounting block were two prints, as if a huge hound had rested its forepaws there. The smell that was almost burned sulfur was strongest here.
Dogs don't make footprints in stone. Light, they don't.
He could make out the trail Lan had followed, too. The hound had trotted up the street as far as the mounting block, then turned and gone back the way it had come, leaving tracks in the stone as if they had been a plowed field.
They just don't.
Dark hound, Lan said, and Zareen gasped.
Loyal moaned softly, for an ogier.
A dark hound leaves no mark on dirt, blacksmith, not even on mud. But stone is another matter. There hasn't been a dark hound seen south of the mountains of Doom since the Trolloc Wars. This one was hunting for something, I'd say. And now that it has found it, it is going to tell its master.
Me? Perrin thought. Grey men and dark hounds hunting me? This is crazy.
Are you telling me Nita was right?
Zareen demanded in a shaky voice.
Old Grimm is really riding with the Wild Hunt? Light, I always thought it was just a story.
Don't be a complete fool, girl, Lan said harshly. If the Dark One were free, we'd all be worse than dead by now.
He peered off down the street, the way the tracks went.
But dark hounds are real enough, almost as dangerous as Murdral, and harder to kill.
Now you bring fetches into it, Zareen muttered. Grey men, fetches, dark hounds. You had better lead me to the Horn of Valir, farm boy. What other surprises do you have waiting for me?
No questions, Lan told her. You still know little enough that Moraine will release you from your oath if you swear not to follow. I'll take that oath myself, and you can go now. You would be wise to give it.
You will not frighten me away, Stoneface, Zareen said. I do not frighten easily.
But she sounded frightened, and she smelled it, too. I have a question, Perrin said, and I want an answer.
You didn't sense this dark hound, Lan, and neither did Moraine. Why not?
The warder was silent for a time. The answer to that, blacksmith, he said grimly at last. Maybe more than you or I, either one, want to know. I hope the answer does not kill us all. You three get what sleep you can. I doubt we will stay the night in Ilion, and I fear we have hard riding ahead.
What are you going to do?
Perrin asked. I am going after Moraine, to tell her about the Dark Hound. She can't be angry with me for following for that, not when she would not know it was there until it took her throat.
The first big drops of rain splattered on the paving stones as they went back inside. Billy had removed the last of the dead Greymen and was sweeping up the sawdust where they had bled. The dark-eyed girl was singing a sad song about a boy leaving his love. Mistress Luhan would have enjoyed it greatly. Lan ran ahead of them, across the common room and up the stairs, and by the time Perrin reached the second floor, the warder was already starting back down, buckling his sword belt on, color-shifting cloak hanging over his arm as if he hardly cared who saw it.
If he is wearing that in a city,
Loyal's shaggy hair almost brushed the ceiling as he shook his head.
I do not know if I can sleep, but I will try. Dreams will be more pleasant than staying awake.
Not always, Loyal, Perrin thought as the Ogier went on down the hall.
Zareen seemed to want to stay with him, but he told her to go to sleep and firmly shut the slatted door in her face. He stared at his own bed reluctantly as he stripped down to his underbreeches.
I have to find out, he sighed, and crawled onto the bed. Rain drummed down outside and thunder boomed.
The breeze across his bed carried some of the rain's coolness, but he did not think he would need any of the blankets at the foot of the mattress. His last thought before sleep claimed him was that he had forgotten to light a candle again, though the room was dark.
Careless. Mustn't be careless. Carelessness ruins the work.
Dreams tumbled through his head. Dark hounds chasing him. He never saw them, but he could hear their howling. Fades and gray men. A tall, slender man flashed into them again and again, in richly embroidered coat and boots with gold fringe. Most of the time he held what seemed to be a sword shining like the sun and laughed triumphantly. Sometimes the man sat on a throne, and kings and queens groveled before him. These felt strange, as if they were not really his dreams at all. Then the dreams changed, and he knew he was in the wolf dream he sought. This time he had hoped for it. He stood atop a high, flat-topped stone spire, the wind ruffling his hair, bringing a thousand dry scents and a faint hint of water hidden in the far distance. For an instant, he thought he had the form of a wolf and fumbled at his own body to make sure what he saw was really him. He wore his own coat and breeches and boots. He held his bow and his quiver hung at his side. The axe was not there.
Hopper! Hopper, where are you?
The wolf did not come. Rugged mountains surrounded him, and other tall spires, separated by arid flats and jumbled ridges,